Hey, everybody. Drew Remenda here. You're listening to another podcast from Teal Town, USA.
Well, boys and girls, it started off good and then it went really bad. Welcome in to Teal Town, USA After Dark. We go live after every single Sharks game. Follow us on all the social media channels while I mute this over here. Thank you. All the social media channels, SoundCloud, YouTube, Instagram, MySpace, Friendster, all of them. We're on all of them. So do us a favor. Give us a little follow. Give us a little subscribe. Give us a little review. Every little thing helps. So with that, game 30 is in the books versus Dallas. Leading into this one, the Sharks had only allowed a goal in their last two games. And unfortunately, they'd only won 5 of their last 15 on the road coming into this and had lost 5 straight in Dallas. Well, make it 6. So we're going to talk about it. I am AJ Strong. With me tonight, Eric Landy down in SD. What's up?
Where to begin? I have some remarks on the defense corps, and yeah, let's leave it at that.
All right. And from the Great White North, one Mr. Ian Reed from Teal Tinted Glasses.
I'm from Teal Town, USA, too.
Well, I was just trying to give you a little pub, bro.
Okay. yeah, I mean, you know, I'm here. I thought this was going to be a happy occasion. I don't think it is anymore.
It felt good coming in. The Sharks come in, you know, again, had only given up one goal in each of their last two games. And Kane starts off the scoring, 8:22 in, and this was a really good play. I mean, Kane pushes off Spezza against the board. The Sharks get a great transition, starts with Kane getting it over to Dylan, who goes to EK65, over to Donskoy, back to Kane, finishes it. I mean, Landy, that you had to have at least felt good seeing that and going, okay, we're continuing, and that was a really nice goal.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of off the rush. You saw EK65 go across ice pass to Evander Kane. Evander Kane kind of just shuffles it in, and, you know, we're off to the races. It's good to see Evander kind of going toward the net. Good to see him getting off the schneid. And, yeah, EK65 really showing his rushing skills there.
I almost thought you said Russian, but not rushing. Okay. well, what did you take from that? I mean, Ian, you got to appreciate the guy hasn't scored in 9 games. He finally gets off the schneid.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone needed a goal, it was Evander Kane on the team. And I think I said as much in a tweet. It was nice to see Evander Kane get that goal. It was good. I mean, the first period I thought was really good. And when the Sharks do good, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, the Sharks really poured it on. Felt like the opportunities were definitely shifted into the Dallas zone. And, you know, it was a really good way to start, you know, a road game.
And this really was a tale of two games. I felt like the Sharks came out on fire in the first period, really owned it. And then the second period, things did kind of shift. But let's finish off the first. Couture. Now, this is the one thing I did want to highlight. I have it written down in my notes. At 14:02, Couture would hook Pitlick. What a horrible name that is. but Couture would hook Pitlick. The Sharks had a fantastic PK. I mean, this is one that you like write down in the books. You throw this on tape and go, okay, this is how you need to PK, guys. Dallas got 0 shots on goal. And in fact, the face-off is in the Sharks' end. They win the face-off, and they dribbled it down to the other end, which immediately burned almost 25 seconds off the shot clock. And after that, they kept everything on the perimeter. They never let the Stars get inside. They contested their blue line the entire time. Again, 0 shots on goal for that. So the Sharks, at least when you saw that, you had to feel really good. But starting the second, a minute in, Sorensen would get a delay of game. They'd only get 1 shot on goal this time for Dallas very early in. And then, again, the Sharks did really well at keeping everything at bay. How did you like the way that that second period started, Ian?
Not good. I mean, it sucks because when you look at that first period of play, it was like textbook. It was textbook hockey. It was exactly what you'd like. I mean, the only thing that would have made it more perfect is if two more of those chances went across the goal line. Like that was the only thing that would have like that would have made it a perfect period. But it was so damn close. It was textbook hockey. And then, of course, as a microcosm of the season, the second things go all squirrely.
No, I think you're completely correct because shots on goal after the first period, San Jose 13, Dallas 5. I mean, again, this was a perfect game for San Jose in the first period, especially after being on the road for 5, coming home for 1, and then having to go out for back-to-backs. But Kane and Meyer, Landy, would get a breakaway and essentially have a goal stolen from them because of that goddamn intent to blow the whistle.
So I kind of want to go over that a little bit.
Yeah, I knew you would. That's why I saved this one for you.
Look, I actually felt like the fault wasn't in an intent to blow as so much as the play had blown dead. Right. And that it was actually the referee losing sight of the puck, right? He didn't see the puck. He thought that Bishop had full control over that and was covering it, but in actuality, the puck was loose. It's unfortunate, you know. It's an unfortunate break, and when they lose sight of the puck, they're trained to blow it down. So you know, it happens.
You cheer when that happens to you. You boo when it happens.
Yeah. Against you. And then, you know, the only other thing that I could think of really is instituting some kind of like, okay, once that puck hits the goalie, you know, give it 10, 15 seconds before you blow it down. If you really want to make it cut and dry.
10 or 15 seconds. I think 5 is fine. I think 10 or 15 is a bit much.
Well, but, I mean, just some set amount of time so that everybody knows, you know, once it hits and the goalie goes down and that puck is lost sight of, you have, you know, a set amount of time before that whistle's going to go.
Okay, but 10 or 15 seconds, you could see wholesale line changes. Yeah, dude, I think 3 to 5 seconds would be good. But 8 seconds later, Jamie Benn would trip Jonas Donskoy. The Sharks would get 4 shots on goal. And to dovetail on what Ian said earlier, the fact of the matter is the Sharks did have some good looks, but just could not beat the Bishop.
Right.
We're all waiting for that one, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously you hate to see that call go against you, but it was the right call. The whistle was clearly blown before the puck crossed the line. You didn't need replay to see it. You knew, like, I just knew that was going to get called back. And it is what it is. I mean, yeah, it sucks. Again, you know, you're ecstatic when that is in favor of your team. You're angry when it goes against you. Nothing's going to change that. I don't really want to dwell on it because there's nothing to dwell on. It was the right call, unfortunately.
And the fun part about this, just numerologically, if that's a word, just playing by the numbers, is that
numerically.
Okay. There you go. I will take that numerically. Anyway, coming into this, like Jones hadn't cracked a 900 save percentage in quite some time. He was drifting between like 890, 892, 894. He comes in tonight at 900. And what does he do tonight? Stops 3 of 30 and 900. So give it up for consistency on that. dear Lord. Hold on. I did see something in the chat. We're going to get to your chat comments in a moment, but what was it? There was something that stood out to me for a hot second. I know that there's a lot of debate about EK65 and, somebody else needs to keep an eye on the chat, but anyway,
I'm trying to keep an eye.
Yeah. Somebody said something. I wish I could remember what it was. I'm sorry. Billy Wynn saying, did the Sharks pull the goalie at the end? Yes, Jones was pulled with 2 minutes left.
And also Tyler Dunsell asking, how did Jones play compared to Bishop? Look, I don't fault any of the goals that went in on Jones. I mean, you know, he had some really nice saves. I felt like he was still continuing that strong play that we saw against Carolina and against Montreal. I didn't have a problem with Jones tonight. I had a problem with the defense core, and you know, I kind of want to go into that when we get some time, and I think when we go over that third period.
Yeah, I want to concur with Landy on that quickly though, because I wasn't super, like, I wasn't like super enthralled, like, oh god, give Jones the Vezina. But at the same time, I think, and you got to remember that, you know, my hockey watching is a little inconsistent right now, but this is one of the best games I think Jones that I've seen. I'm not saying the best, one of the best games he's played this season, but of the games I've seen, this was probably one of the better outings for him that I've seen.
Yes. Yeah, strong, you know, strong on the puck. Felt like he fronted the puck really well, played the angles well, came out and challenged. And, you know, he looked confident, which is, you know, the telltale sign of how a goalie is kind of going. You know, and that early in the season, you could see him shrug his shoulders. Early in the season, his angles weren't good. You know, not making great plays with, you know, trying to do poke checks. You know, just fumbling around the puck in the back of the net. So, Jones, I think he's starting to kind of round into form a little bit. I mean, in three games, he's looked fairly decent. I'm okay with the goaltender right now.
No, I'm fine with him. But getting back into the second, we'll touch on Jones again in a minute. Getting back into the second, 5 minutes later after the Ben trip on Donskoy, Janmark would take advantage of a horrific line change by the Sharks. And of course, post-Teal syndrome would strike again as Roman Polak would get the assist on this one. And this is one that, yeah, I would have liked to have seen Jones have. This was the only one out of the three that I kind of look at Jones and I go, okay, you know, I mean, it's not full-on breakaway. It's pretty damn close. But if you're, you know, if you're going to throw Jones under the bus for any goal tonight, it probably would have been that one. And I don't know if that shook Jones up tonight, because after that goal at 14:05 of the second, the rest of that period, Jones was on lockdown, especially in the final 4 minutes. Jones made such a great save that the goal light actually went on at American Airlines Center tonight in Dallas. Like, everybody in the building thought it went in, except for Jones. So you got to give it up for that. But Dallas did come on in the second. Again, shots on goal after the first, 13-5 for San Jose. After the second, it was 16-14 for Dallas. And faceoffs for this pretty much remained even. And it you know, it started off 53-47 for Dallas, ended up being 52-48. So it was pretty even in the circle. Both teams came in tonight, remember, 33 points each. I mean, these are pretty evenly matched teams, with the exception of the fact that Dallas is pretty top heavy, Ian. I mean, you've got Radulov, Sagan, and Ben accounting for the lion's share of the points for Dallas, whereas obviously with San Jose, it's a bit more spread out.
Yes. No, I agree with that. And, you know, that save on Ben was stupid. There was a save on Ben, I think, late in the game that was just dumb. I thought for sure was a goal. And I was just like, I kind of was like, threw my hands in the air, because I was like, I don't know, I was up. I think I was putting Calum, like getting Calum ready to go upstairs so he'd go to bed. And I think I was watching it, and I wasn't really, I had my glasses on, and I wasn't close enough to my monitor, and I could have swore it went in just with, by the way Ben moved. And I'm like, oh, whatever. And then sure enough, Jones actually saved it, and it was pretty.
Yeah. So that's how the second would shake out. 21 seconds into the third, Pavelski would be tripped by Como. And to me, this is really where the game switched, because they go into the third, tied at one. Very early into the third, the Sharks get a power play opportunity, and what happens? Zero shots on goal. Donut.
Not only that, AJ, you know, zero shots on goal. It looked bad. I mean, in that first period, we saw a lot of crisp passing. We saw a lot of good neutral zone entries. It just, that seemed like it was kind of a well-oiled machine. They were getting some looks.
Well, that wasn't in the first period. That was in the second. The Sharks had no power play in the first.
Sorry. I mean, in the second period. But in that third period, that power play was bad. I mean, it was to the point where it sucked momentum from the Sharks. You know, they should have deferred. you know, that penalty. Because honestly, it really killed the momentum of the team. The Stars fed off that penalty kill. And then right after that, it was like this green wave that was coming.
Oh, man. Just like, yeah. Would you guys just like to take the power play in our blue paint? Would that be okay for you?
Yeah, right? So, Dave B. Pilot, Vlasic sighting on the power play. Exactly. And so opening up the
third... sighting at all, to be honest.
So that's exactly where I want to go with this tonight. And my biggest takeaway is this.
Well, can we finish off the third before we get high level with this?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So after starting off the third, again, Pavelski gets tripped. No shots on goal for the Sharks. A quick 4 minutes later, Heiskanen from Pitlick and Foska makes it a 2-1 game for Dallas. And you think, okay, you know, it's only 2-1. All right, the Sharks can get this backed up. And less than 2 minutes later, Richie scores on a 2-on-1 from Shoren Spezza. That's one that I really can't fault Jones for. Some 2-on-1s you can, but that one I can't. And it was telling, too, when you go into the third and you look at the stats and you say the Sharks are plus 15 goal differential after the first period, but they're minus 12 after the second period. This is not good. We need to fix this. So the real problem, though, of course, is 33 seconds later, Couture would tip in one from EK65 from Dilly, a wicked wrister that Couture, that is the teaser goal, my friends. That was the one that everybody got excited and said, oh, okay, it's 3-2, we can do this. 3-1, it was insurmountable, but 3-2, we can do this. 18 minutes left, the Sharks would pull Jones, but even those last 2 minutes when you're trying to skate with desperation, I still don't think the Sharks did enough or got into the slot, got into the dirty areas, got into the danger zones in order to get stick taps to Dallas. They kept the Sharks, even with the empty net, for the most part, they kept the Sharks to the perimeter and didn't let anything get down low. So it would finish off, again, 52-48 in a circle, shots on goal for the Sharks, 43, Dallas 30. And, you know, what seems to be a trend for the Sharks this season is quantity, not quality. So let's talk about it. Your take on Vlasic, Landy.
So I don't know about any of you guys, but I have noticed a large number of pucks crossing over his stick. He is not putting his body against the wall, and he's letting those pucks skip over his stick. And that's not normally something we associate Vlasic with. He's high. I mean, he's got such a great ability to keep that puck in along the blue line. I mean, we've seen him do, you know, those stupid keep-ins where you're seeing almost the whole puck go over, but just this tiny sliver stays on the blue line and he pulls it back in. And he's so sure-handed. But this year, I've seen so many pucks flip over his stick. I've seen so many pucks just slightly elude him. And I'm wondering if he's battling something with his hands or if he's, and this might get super technical, so bear with me here, but is changed something with his equipment via stick wise or via taping wise. I don't understand what is his deal with keeping the puck in along the blue line.
He went with double-sided tape.
I guess, or maybe he should go with double-sided tape, but it's, you know, we've seen multiple breakaways because of his inability to keep the puck in along the blue line, and it's not good. And you know what? Tonight in the Vlasic-Braun pairing, Braun was the person carrying that pairing, you know, and Braun didn't even really have that good a game, but he certainly was better than Vlasic. I still don't understand what the hell the coaching staff is doing putting Vlasic on the power play. He's for that power play in the third period in the very beginning. I think it's a minute 30 seconds in when they get a face-off in the Stars zone, they put Vlasic there on the point. And
this is something that I will jump on this bandwagon. I feel like you put, you know, first power play unit, I don't know, maybe you go Thornton, Couture, Hurdle, Kane or something, but you, and then you put Burns. And then the next round you put, you know, LeBanc and Meyer and whoever else, and then you put Carlson. You can go with that. If you're going to put Carlson and Burns out on the same unit, you have to pull Burns's beard, bang on his helmet, and say, for the next 2 minutes, you're a freaking forward.
Yeah, and Rob Iman kind of chiming into Vlasic has to be hiding an injury. Look, I mean, when he shot that puck in on Ben Bishop, first off, he did not take an extra second to let somebody kind of come in front of Bishop. So it was a horrible shot selection. I feel like, you know, his shot selection this year hasn't been very good, but I've also seen a loss of velocity on his wrister. His wrister was normally like deceptively heavy. It was a heavy shot, but this year I'm seeing a lack of velocity. And quite frankly, I'm seeing a lack of using, I guess, shot intelligence or shot IQ, because it's just not there. It was high, it was up in the crest, and it wasn't going for a rebound on the pads. It's just not good. And he has to be better. It, you know, bar none, whatever you want to say, he has to be better. I mean, he's sporting a pretty big minus, and I know that we all say, oh, well, you know, plus minus isn't the end-all be-all of stats. But still, I mean, it's a stat, and it's there. And
it's one that that Vlasic has significantly done very well in.
Right.
Ian, it seems like you haven't spoken in 20 minutes. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, look, I mean, I kind of agree. I mean, I don't know about an injury. Like, maybe I'm very skeptical. Like, I hate when if there's like, you know, I know that, look, the Sharks are really stubborn about reporting injuries. But there's a part of me that, like, when I default to injury without any, you know, solid evidence to the contrary, I just feel like I'm sticking up for my boy. And I'm not saying that's what Landy's doing. I just can't do it until I hear, like, something where, oh, Vlasic's been nursing this or that. Then I'll be like, okay, cool. You know, maybe this is the problem. The concern that I have is not only the deployment of Vlasic, but I think Erik Karlsson was out for, like, 2 minutes and 30 seconds at the end of the game there. Like, that's mm-hmm. just silly. Like, you want to know why you can't, you know, you get just crappy perimeter shots and everything? Well, because no one has the jam to actually skate to the front of the net when they're out there for 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Like, you can't overplay a guy like that. Like, for those that have never, you know, played a shift in hockey, and look, and I'm, you know, I played beer league, so, you know, don't look at me like I'm a, you know, professional hockey player, but 2 minutes is a long time to skate, even, you know, for a schmo like me. I can't, you know, even at the best of your shape, I mean, 2 minutes is a long damn shift. Like, that's you're asking a lot of someone's body. And I'm not saying Erik Karlsson isn't up to the task, but I just feel like you're hurting yourself. You want guys on the ice that are going to have the jam to do something if the opportunity happens. And if you're overplaying all these guys in the last 2 minutes of the game, if that opportunity happens, they're not going to have any jam left to push that puck because they're dead tired. And the other thing that I have a problem with as far as the defense core goes, I think we can sing the praises of Radim Šimek a little bit. But what the hell is he doing?
Oh, dude.
Okay, but
I'm ready to get on I'm ready to get on the mountaintops to sing the praises of him.
Yeah, I agree. He's been pretty good.
What the hell was he doing out there as the extra attacker?
No, that I will totally give you. And let's take it to the chat real quick. How much does it take away from a power play to have two right-handed defensemen? Do you really need to have a right-left combo? No, you don't. I think plenty of teams have proven that.
Right, and I think it's just the stubborn deployment. It's the lack of keeping Burns in the Ovi spot. I mean, the guys over at Circling the Cup, banging and banging and banging this.
I'd rather see Pavelski in that spot.
I mean, AJ has been banging and banging and banging this. I mean, look.
That's what I do.
You can't have two righties, you know, patrolling the blue line, but that means somebody's always going to be on their offhand.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just something you're going to have to deal with. Now, the way to solve that is to put the Wookiee up front, you know, on the power play, like AJ was saying. You know, it's just this fickle deployment, and it's really, I mean, they have not figured out how to put Carlson and Burns together on a power play. And, you know, I don't know. I guess I just feel like the deployment is really what's bothering me with this team. And the other thing that is really kind of starting to creep into my mind now is I don't know if they're tuning the coaching staff out or they're just not, you know, crisp mentally, but what is up with these horrible changes in the second period? Every single time we go into the second period, I am cringing throughout the whole thing because it just seems like they are playing hope hockey, trying to chip the puck out so they can get the damn change.
Well, I think that goes back to the thing I said about long shifts too. Again, it's the long change. If you know, it's the long change to get back to the bench. And if you're out there for extended amounts of time and taking longer shifts, you're going to have less jam to get back to the bench. And I think that's part of it. Going back to the question, though, about the left-right D, I don't think, you know, left-right D, I think is ideal, but you can do two righties. The problem isn't, you know, again, is what Landy's saying. It's positioning. It's the positioning on the power play. And that's what's hurting the Sharks. It's not that the two right-handed shots are out there. It's the position that they are on the ice, you know, the areas that on the ice that they are when they're trying to execute their play. And that's the problem.
Yeah, I would definitely go with that. A couple other final things I had in my notes, and these are just fun things from watching the broadcast. Randy Hahn, you know him, you love him, but he did have a pretty kind of a funny call out. And I think, you know, that could be just a case of him being just kind of wrapped up in the game. But he called out and he's talking about how, you know, the Sharks are out shooting, you know, Dallas, I think at this point, you know, like 38-28. But what he didn't like put into context was the fact that the Sharks were 8 shots up just after the first. And he's calling this with like 6.5 left in the game. So kind of making it a little more extreme than it actually was. If I remember correctly, this is only the second game the Sharks have lost after scoring the first goal, so that's not good. But the I don't want to – I'm just going to say this and drop it. I don't want to get into a whole discussion. There were a couple trips and cross-checks the last 5-6 minutes where I do think the Sharks probably should have gotten a power play, but I will always say this. I will definitely take no calls versus too many calls, and I didn't have too much of a problem with the guy swallowing the whistles tonight. I thought there's some heavy hits. I mean, Sorensen and Schimmick throwing the body. This felt like an old. This felt like a game when Dallas used to be
in the pack.
Yeah, but PDB did throw the line blender out there towards the end. We did see Thornton out there with Kane and LeBanc. So I mean, they were definitely trying to find that spark. I'm not going to judge it on just tonight. We saw them, you know, win that final one in Montreal after having the closed door meeting with GM Doug Wilson and Coach DeBoer. And then we saw them show up really well for that one home game versus Carolina, but boom, back on the road. And they've won one of their last 6 road games. This is not good. And we'll see what happens with Arizona tomorrow, who, if I remember correctly, is coming into that game on a 3-game winning streak. So,
I want to quickly address something that hasn't been brought up a lot lately, and especially in the fervor of maybe we should be looking at a coaching change. PDB was re-upped in the summer, very quietly. Ray Ratto broke that on CSN on their website. I believe it was Wednesday or Thursday. He put a little nugget in there that says PDB was re-upped in the summertime. Yeah. So if you want to talk about security,
let me I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me correct myself. I just said that Arizona had won 3 of their last 2. That was incorrect. They've won their last 3. They lost their last one versus Washington. They won the previous 4 consecutive games. So I just want to make sure that the facts are out there. But that's the way it is. But yes, even Kevin Kurz in The Athletic, I believe earlier this week, addressing the idea of coming from many fans on social media saying PDB has lost the room. You look at his history, he can never get past his, he can't ever make it beyond a third entire year. Something always bad happens in his fourth year. And Kevin Kurz pointed out, well, you know, earlier on, kind of debate point was, well, if you look at that every year, PDB, the skill that he had to work with had gone down. But of course, you can't.
Not a point that I haven't made 100 times.
Yeah, but you can't say that about the Sharks.
That's right. No, so, I agree.
Yeah,
so I agree.
My whole thing is, you can scream from the mountaintops that PDB needs to be canned, and I may agree with you once in a while because I'm upset in heat of the moment. But my answer always to that is, okay, with who? Who replaces him? Like, within reason.
Right, of course. And then, you know, this team is not, I mean, it's, I wouldn't say it's frugal with its money, but it's very smart with its money, right? You know, they don't make a lot of mistakes money-wise, you know, insofar as the front office goes. So, you know, it's not like they're going to bite the bullet on axing a contract they just signed. So, you know, I as much as we want to see some changes, I don't think it's going to happen. But I will,
it changes everything. I agree.
And I will throw this out there, guys. It looks like this team is a center short. I just keep going back to the face-off numbers. I just keep going back to, you know, the way that Suomela is kind of getting forced off the puck a little bit. They look like they're one center short.
So how do you solve that with a team that has Pavelski, Thornton, and Couture?
You got to split them up. You got to split them up. You can't. You don't have the luxury anymore of having you know, one.
Couture is a winger.
Yeah,
I mean Pavelski is a winger.
Or Pavelski as a winger, or you know, Hurdle as a winger. I mean, as much as we love
Hurdle's never going back to center.
That's never going to happen.
Have you looked at his face-off numbers?
Oh no, he's great in that position. He's fine in that.
Because Couture can't win a draw.
Yeah.
So if you take Hurdle off his line, Couture's line's not going to win any more draws.
Yeah. It's no. Hurdle is great to have to win the face-off, but his numbers just show he not only Hurdle, but the players that he plays with, the numbers are better when Hurdle's at wing.
And you know what? I mean, we circle around this guy too, who shows up sometimes and doesn't show up other times. Jonas Donskoy. I mean, the guy is...
Oh, shit. Ian's about ready to go off. Right, I'm going to enjoy this. Go ahead.
I just you know, we bust Melker Carlson's balls all the freaking time. And look, it's rightfully so. The guy doesn't have... Besides penalty killing, you know, he lucks in the goals. You know, he misses wide open nets. And you know, he needs to be put on the bench as well. But Jonas Donskoy, I mean, the giveaways tonight, giveaway after giveaway, and unable to move the puck through the neutral zone, getting pushed off the puck. It's, you know, for a team that is so possession heavy and such a puck driver, having that kind of giveaway machine when you have Erik Karlsson on the team, that's a recipe for disaster. I don't know what about you, Ian, but what are you thinking on that?
I don't know. I think that, I mean, look at your bottom six production needs to be better, but I feel like this season we spent a lot of time picking on bit parts of the team rather than glaring problems at the core of it. And I don't know. That's just my opinion. I feel like, yeah, I mean, you know, some of your bit parts aren't being as good as they can, but it's accentuated by how bad the quote unquote core players are playing. I don't consider Jonas Donskoy a core player. You know, he's $1.6 million guy. He could replace him next season. You know, you don't have to resign him. You know, Melker Carlson, another guy, $2 million bit player. Yeah, he's overpaid. But again, bit guy. He's not like, I don't know.
You're saying like, that like these are guys that you could like easily replace with like Chartier and Gambrell or Perron or Pavlov.
free agents or whatever. Like they're interchangeable pieces. I just think it's accentuated by the fact that the core is not as good as it should be. The guys that are signed into Oblivion are the guys that I'm the most worried about right now.
Yep.
The Vlasics. Yep. You know, maybe not so much the Burn. Well, yeah, but Burn's leading the team in points. I mean, you can get mad at his defensive play, but the points are there.
Yeah.
He's going to be a not. He's, if he keeps his points up, regardless of how minus he is, he's probably going to be up for a Norris again.
Okay. And I'll give you that. But just based on Joe Pavelski's production so far this season, don't you want a Sharks team that has like half of the roster in a contract year?
Right. And that, I think, you know, Joe Pavelski scored. Yeah, it's hard, man. Like
Joe Pavelski is literally like 10 games away. And again, tonight was game 30. Mm-hmm. He is going to hit his season total from last year. He's going to hit that before the end of this year.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be great. I just hope that the Sharks don't see that and go, well, we'll just sign him until he's 42 because this can't never end. You know, like that's the part that concerns me is Vlasic. I mean, Vlasic hasn't been Vlasic this year. Right. You know, Landy earlier brought up the stick play, and that's his bread and butter. You know, I think Kurz put out an article, I think, the last couple of days talking about how the Sharks aren't as physical. That's never really been Vlasic's game. Vlasic's game has never been hit you off the puck. It's always been, you know, excellent stick work as you come by.
Whoa. You're talking about the Sharks not having a physical game. When have they had a physical game in the last 7-8 years? You know, yeah, exactly. It's like
my point is expecting that exactly, but expecting that from a guy who's been here all that time and being like, oh, well, you know, Vlasic's not being physical enough now.
He's never had a physical game.
That is my point. But if his stick game isn't working, then what's going on? Justin Braun, I mean, here's another guy coming up, you know, and people are pretty split on. I think Justin Braun's been past his best before date for the last 2 years. Like, I think that's where you need to shed salary. That's where you start because he's definitely not worth a raise. You get Justin Braun raised, you're in trouble. And the other guy, like Evander Kane, you just signed him for 7 years. You know, we talked about him getting Google. I'm not as down on Evander Kane as a lot of people, but we definitely need a little more from him.
Yeah, I mean, right now he's sitting on 17 points in 30 games. I mean, 8 goals, 9 assists.
Yeah, but let's also call it out. You say 8 goals in the first 30 games. Let's also call out half of those goals came in the first 4 games.
Of course. Right. And I totally agree with that. I mean, Evander Kane is the guy that I'm looking at that needs to step up.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Todd Gack in the chat saying we need a guy like Ryan Reeves. But the Sharks have had a guy like Ryan Reeves. We've had Rafi Torres. We've had Scott Parker. We've had Brian Marchment. We've had guys that are like that.
The Sharks have it right. Look at, as much as Evander Kane maybe not be producing to the level we want, he has that in his game. Timo Meier has that in his game. Both those players can actually put the puck in the net also. They're not just one-dimensional ass parties.
Like, you know what I think it is, though? You're looking for that on your blue line. Like, you're looking for... Exactly. But Simic, you know, tonight, his third consecutive game. Also, Radim Šimek, I love what he has brought to the party over the last 3 games. Do not get me wrong. I will take Šimek over Heed and over Ryan every day the year is long. However, you've got Ryan Reeves, who's like 6'6", soaking wet, whereas Šimek is 5'11", on a good day. And I understand Ryan's like
even smaller.
Yeah, and I understand that it's like, yeah, you want that kind of bigger guy. No, it's funny you talk about Joakim Ryan because I had the guy like autograph my jersey like maybe 3 weeks ago at a practice, and I was like, God damn, you're small. I mean, I'm 6'2", 220, and I'm looking at him going, you could be bigger for a defenseman.
Right.
I'm just saying. But it's so hard, though, to find that balance between size and fleet of foot.
Right. You know? No, and that's exactly it because – it's not just good enough to be big anymore. Like the Sharks are never going to be like, remember back in the day when it was, I think the average height of the team was like 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah.
You had Thornton and Murray and
Marlowe,
just stupid big. Like they're just all stupid.
Oh, they were what was it like 5 or 6 years ago? It's like they were the biggest and the fastest.
Yeah.
They weren't necessarily the youngest, but they said speed, or maybe that's what it was. They were the biggest and the youngest, not the fastest.
Yeah, right. I was gonna say Douglas Murray was never going to be mistaken for a speedster.
Well, no. But see, that's the thing that I totally respected about Douglas Murray's game is the fact that people would skate at him with like a running start and bounce off of him like he was a friggin' brick wall.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, again, Ian's bringing this totally right. I mean, the game has changed.
Yeah.
You can't have a pylon like Douglas Murray.
No, not a pylon, but I would like to see some of the players. And again, if it's like, I would love to see Dylan have a little bit of like Kyle MacLaren to his game where he can throw out the occasional hip check. Like, you're not looking to damage people. You're not headhunting. But right. If you see the play coming together, you stick your fat hip out there and you kind of level a guy. And that was actually one of the fun things about watching this game tonight versus the Stars. We saw Timo Meier flip a guy head over feet.
Right.
Shimmick. Yeah, we saw Shimmick nail a guy into the boards tonight. Sorensen has been throwing the body around for like the last five games. And to be honest with you, I was in Sorensen's corner. What was the game before Montreal? Was it Ottawa? Yeah, Ottawa. It was like Sorensen was like the only guy out there. He seemed to be playing a pissed off game. Not that he was pissed off because they were down 6-2. He was pissed off because it felt like he was the only one playing the goddamn game for the Sharks that night.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you have to play that way when you're not Melker Carlson and you could go to the press box anytime for no reason.
Okay. And you guys bring up such a great point with the physicality. Where is Evander Kane's jam this year?
Like, he went after a couple guys tonight.
I don't have a beef with his jam, honestly. I feel like Evander Kane, sometimes to his detriment, but it seems like whenever anybody looks at one of our star players, Evander Kane is generally in their face. Same with Timo Meier. Like, this team isn't the team. Yeah, and Sorensen too. But I mean, like, when you look at, like, Sorensen's obviously not on the ice the same time as, I mean, he did protect Joe Thornton when he was playing down further in the lineup. But I mean, Evander Kane, Timo Meier, these guys are playing with your, you know, with your key players. And anytime someone looks at them wrong, like, one of them is generally there getting in your face. And that never happened before. The Sharks would just take the hit and they'd all skate off to the bench. And poor Logan Couture would, you know, get uncrumpled from the corner where he was turned into a paper ball and wander back to the bench after everyone had already gone back like nothing had happened. That doesn't happen this year, and I'm glad for that.
No, I agree. But the thing that I'm trying to illustrate here, Ian, is that last year when Kane was brought in from the trade, he injected this life force, this willingness to throw the body around, this reckless kind of skating, just reckless abandon. And I feel like he shows that in spurts this year, but we haven't seen it consistently.
Yeah, it hasn't been like the Owen Nolan that you
were hoping.
But here's
the problem with that, though. Yeah, he did. He came in with reckless abandon and everything else. And what happened against Vegas? Nothing, because he got hurt playing that style. Like, you got to find that line between, you know, being reckless and still being healthy. You know, and I think the other thing too is sometimes I'm guilty of this too. I think as fans, sometimes we look at something happening, a situation, we look at it in a bubble, right? And with the way the Sharks were going, you know, things were going bad. Evander Kane shows up, everything kind of goes right.
For a hot second.
In reality, for a hot second, and you know, and while we look, because it's easy to say, and I'm not saying Evander Kane had nothing to do with it, but I sometimes wonder if we gave Evander Kane too much credit for the turnaround and push to the playoffs last year, especially beating a really crappy Ducks team in four, like we did. Like, I wonder if we just look at that Evander Kane that we saw. And he did get injured. I just wonder if we just gave him maybe a little too much credit for the sum of the parts.
I think that's a good line of thinking. AJ, I think we should get to that time of the show that we all like.
Oh, it's always a lot of fun. Yeah. So we got to jump in. So that kind of wraps up everything that was for this game. Talk about Arizona in a hot second. But first,
have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around.
Oh, yeah. We will. We always will. We will have that courtesy. So only four games played tonight. Yeah, everybody and their mother plays tomorrow, of course, because Saturday. But tonight, only four games played. Funny enough, two of them still in progress. Funny enough, one of them out of control. All of them, it seems, to involve the Pacific Division. So the Jets got shut out by the Blues earlier today, losing 1-0. There's a game that had really nothing to talk about. And in fact, I'm even looking on NHL.com. NHL.com, for some reason tonight, has decided to not show who the goaltenders were in the game. I'm not. Oh, and now it is. Well, at least for the Sharks. So we know Jones took the loss. Bishop took the win in that. But two games ongoing at the moment. 30 seconds left in the third. I have a feeling that the Edmonton Oilers are going to win this.
It just went final.
Yeah, okay, because Edmonton Oilers up 7-2. Holy cannoli. The Oilers broke it open. But you would think 7-2, yet not a hat trick among the group. Draisaitl did have two, but you would think. Anyway, so that's the way it worked out in Edmonton. Who was the goaltender? Was that Talbot tonight in Edmonton?
Let me
check. Way,
I don't know if that was Cam Talbot of old. Somebody gave him the elixir of life or what
that
it is.
That's what I'm saying. I'm going, man, Talbot pulled that off? Really?
Yeah, it was Talbot.
It was Talbot, but so evidently Stalock got the start in the Dubnyk got the start in this one, let in 3 for 6 and played in a whole 8 minutes and got yanked. Former Shark Alex Stalock gets the tap on the shoulder. He goes in. So ba-boom. Talbot named second star in this, by the way. And currently going on with just over 4 minutes left in the second period. Canes and Ducks tied at 1. Canes 20 shots on goal right now to the 11 for the Ducks. The goals for this: Bishop for the Canes, Silverberg for the Ducks, a shorty for Silverberg. So there you go. That was,
have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around.
So there you go. Right now, as it stands, Pacific Division wise, the Sharks fall out of the top three. So they're looking up right now. It is Calgary, the Calgary Flames, the hockey jerk in mine, our secondary team, the Calgary Flames, killing it right now. 38 points to lead the Pacific. Anaheim. You think about all the injuries that Anaheim has had to deal with. The fact that they are second right now is amazing at 35. They do have a minus 11 goal differential, but I feel like a lot of that came in early on. They're on a 5-game win streak right now. Calgary on a 4-game win streak right now. And slotting in at number three now, Las Vegas coming in hot, plus 7 goal differential, 8-2 over their last 10. Anaheim 7-1-2 over their last 10. Calgary 8-1-1 over the last 10. Do you sense, you know, a recurring theme?
Imagine the Sharks with John Gibson.
Yeah. damn right. Sharks need to get it together, I think, is what we're saying. So Arizona, Sharks head to Arizona tomorrow night. You know, Arizona, again, they won 4 in a row, lost their last game versus the Stanley Cup champions, the current ones anyway. We'll see what that entails. Arizona kind of middle of the pack. You know, that again, Sharks with 33 points currently, but Arizona only 5 points back. Funnily enough, both San Jose and Arizona, the same goal differential, minus 1. But Arizona did lose their last one against Washington, and they did get, you know, not exactly killed, 4-2, but what are you going to do? So imagine the Sharks are the coaching staff. Wouldn't that be cool? So another back-to-back, the NHL schedulers, it felt like they're like punking the Sharks this month. It's like just an awful lot of road games and an awful lot of back-to-backs, but that's where we're at. So after winning at Montreal, coming home, beating Carolina, and beating Carolina soundly, although I will be the first one to, like, you know, jump into the fray and say, you know, that second goal was pretty goddamn lucky and pretty goddamn fluky. But tonight, I think the Sharks did kind of piss one away. It was, you know, you take away like a hot 90 seconds, a hot 100 seconds from tonight's game, and they're all right. But the Sharks, to me, Dallas turned it on in the second, and the Sharks just fell asleep in the you know, the first like 7 minutes of the third. So with that, we're going to get out of here. We will be here for you after the Arizona Coyotes game tomorrow. Landy, your final thoughts and where the people can find you on the social media.
Well, my final thought is let's hope the defensive core gets their shit together. And I feel like we've been saying that for the past 15 games. But yeah, it still holds true. You can find me on all of the social media garbage using my first name, Eric, E-R-I-K, and my last name, Landy, L-A-N-D-I. Go find me.
And Ian Reed coming in hot from teal tinted glasses.
Yeah, it was funny because earlier in the chat, and I didn't want to hit on it because just obviously to keep the show going, but someone asked what has Joe Thornton done that's worth $5 million this season? And I actually, on the last Teal Tinted Glasses, we actually had a little chat about how players are played as far as, like, you know, and is it shifting from what are you going to do from me than what have you done for me? So I think if your question is how is Joe Thornton making $5 million, might be worth a listen. Last week's Teal Tinted Glasses. Other than that, at Ian Blogs Hockey on the Twitter machine. I'll be around.
He has to give himself some of that self-love for the teal tinted glasses.
Yeah.
Hey now. For me, AJ_Strong on the Twitter, on the Insta. Also throwing up some grams for Teal Town USA. Once again, follow us at Teal Town USA on Insta, on Twitter. Subscribe to this channel if you please. Share it with a friend. If you feel like leaving us a cool review on iTunes, we'll always appreciate one of those. Anything else, SoundCloud, all the social media channels, just search Teal Town USA. You can find everything on the website, tealtownusa.com. But I would be remiss for us to not dive into one little tiny aspect of Sharks hockey, which is the San Jose Barracuda play the Tucson Road. Now, you have to take into account San Jose Barracuda right now, top of their Pacific Division, but just only by a skosh above the Tucson Roadrunners. The next two games for the Barracuda, Sunday night, Monday night in Tucson. These are two huge games if you follow the Cuda, which Ian Reed does.
Yeah, definitely going to be a big test for the Barracuda this weekend going up against the Roadrunners. The Roadrunners, like you said, they're right on their heels for the Pacific Division lead. And I think the Barracuda have been still really good lately, obviously, with guys bouncing up and down. They've definitely seen some changes in their lines and whatnot, but they're starting to look healthy again. Both goalies have been great.
Like, oh, dude, really Thibault and Cornash are just unbelievable.
Unbelievable. You know, they basically split the load, and they both, like, neither one of them has suffered for it. I'm excited to hopefully catch at least one of these games. And see what the Barracuda have, because I think this is going to be a big, a huge test this early in the season. But it's definitely, I don't think their last road trip to Tucson went very well. So I think they're going to want to, remedy that.
Yeah,
Tony.
Absolutely. So with that, everybody's medic alert just went off, or they just scanned their tickets. But for those of you who are hungry, we'll throw that out for you. Yeah, it's pizza time. So with that, thanks for showing up again. Do us a favor, subscribe, give us a thumbs up, leave comments underneath below, and we will see you after the Arizona Coyotes versus the Sharks game tomorrow night. Have a great night, everybody. Keep it real, keep it teal, and keep it real teal.